Fanning. Weekends on 2FM.
Are you coming in, Brian? Are you? Are you coming in now? Yeah. Okay, Brian's coming in because I want to talk about, which I mentioned earlier on, about kind of anti-heroes, would I call them that? I'll call them that, yeah. Okay, Brian, sit down there and talk to me, for God's sake. Brian Redden, have you got a seat there? You're not in your car? It's great to see you, you know, because look, it's usually the car.
Come in and say hello to you and see you face to face.
Right, exactly, yeah. Okay, so...
I better switch off my phone.
You better switch off your phone, yeah. Have you got, any IFTA awards coming up or anything? No?
No, nothing. No ceremonies coming up, no nominations that I know of, you know. Unless there's some surprise. Maybe they give me a lifetime achievement that I don't know about. That could be a possibility. Right. Have you been asked to contribute in any way?
No.
Oh, then obviously it's not happening.
In other words, I'd be one of the talking heads. Yeah, he's a moron. But anyway, you know. Anyway, this week we wanted to take a look at something because the death was announced of the actor Michael K. Williams in New York. He's best known for his portrayals of Omar Little in The Wire and Chalky White in Boardwalk Empire. Omar in particular was one of the greatest anti-heroes ever to appear on the screen, and anti-heroes is what we want to talk about now. Morally compromised, not quite good guys that you hate to love, and basically Brian is here now to sort of talk us through a few of them. The greatest of all time, probably. Why are we fascinated by anti-heroes? And actually, you better give me a bit of a definition that's even better than the one I gave there, because I'm not sometimes
sure. Yeah, your definition wasn't bad. First of all, is it anti-hero or anti-hero?
Oh, listen, I don't care.
I don't know. I'd say anti-hero.
Right.
So an anti-hero, what is an anti-hero? It's actually a tough question to answer, because essentially, okay, so you have a conventional hero, the lead character in a drama. So in this case, we could be talking about a play or a book. In this case, we're talking about movies. And the anti-hero is literally that, the anti-hero. Because usually he or she are usually the lead character in the film, but they don't have the attributes that a conventional hero would have. So in other words, they would lack idealism, morality, all those kind of things.
But you're rooting for them even though they're kind of bad.
You are rooting for them. So they're kind of bad guys.
Yeah.
Sometimes they have, most of the time, they do have good intentions, but they get to the end result in murkier ways than a hero would. So they're not afraid to bend the law. They're not afraid to, you know, to kill people or do whatever they have to do to get their own way. So they're slightly darker characters than heroes. And the reason I think we like them is because they're much more interesting. They're much more nuanced and there's much more layers to them. Like actors much prefer, like an actor will tell you, there's no actor wants to play Superman because Superman's boring. Superman is just good. He's decent. He's moral. He is the hero. But there's no layers in there. There's nothing for an actor to really get into. But an anti-hero, you know, that has something like, for example, Batman. So there'd be a perfect example of an anti-hero who's a bit darker, you know, who bends the law a little bit to achieve his goals.
Do you think in some ways then that what you're saying is that the end justifies the means kind of person?
With an anti-hero, that's exactly the case. Yeah. Whereas a hero, a conventional hero like Superman or Indiana Jones or kind of things, really, that wouldn't be the case. But they're just kind of a little bit more interesting. But it is a very thin line because you have anti-hero. So when is an anti-hero a villain? Like maybe it's the villain of the piece, and that could often be the case. You know, sometimes they're completely morally corrupt and you don't want to cheer for them. You want them to get it in the end. You want them to not see the closing credits. So, you know, whether you cheer for them or not is kind of dependent on where you are at that point in your life, I suppose. But they're definitely much more interesting characters.
That's very good. Point.
It's very deep, but I didn't want to get so deep on a Saturday afternoon. But there you go, but it's really they're much more interesting characters than heroes, I think, because and certainly actors really want to play them because it gives them a lot more stuff.
Well,
let's give us an example
of something.
So I think, you know, if you go right back in the early days, like I think some of the greatest anti-heroes are the gangster movies, right? And that's kind of really where it all started in Warner. Well, that's not true. It started with the Greeks, but in terms of film, with Warner Brothers gangster movies back in the 20s and 30s. And I think one of my favourites and one of my favourite films is Jimmy Cagney.
I knew you were going to say Jimmy Cagney.
Oh, yeah, but it had to be Jimmy Cagney. I mean, he did so many gangster roles in White Heat and things like that. But my favourite is the character he plays called Rocky Sullivan in a film called Angels with Dirty Faces. Mm. Have you seen that?
I have, yeah.
It's a fantastic movie.
Yeah.
Directed by Michael Curtiz, who also directed Casablanca,
which maybe
we'll talk about in a minute. But so Jimmy Cagney plays this tough guy gangster called Rocky Sullivan, who grew up on the mean streets of New York with a friend of his, played by Pat O'Brien. And Pat O'Brien ended up becoming a priest, and Jimmy Cagney's character ends up becoming a gangster. So you got two best friends, one's a priest, one's a gangster.
Yeah.
And what makes him really interesting and an anti-hero is that, you know, he's bad. He's bad right through and through. You think that all the way through the movie, that he's a bad guy who will shoot and kill people people to get his own way. He's a bootlegger, he's a gangster, he's a murderer, he's a criminal. But really underneath it all, he is a good guy who's trying hard, you know, to change things. And that comes to a head in the very final moments in the film, which is one of the most amazing scenes, I think, in any Hollywood movie ever, where Pat O'Brien comes, he's been arrested and he's going to the electric chair. So he's been sentenced to death. He's going to the electric chair and he's going to spit in the eye of the cops. And Cagney's this real kind of boisterous fella. So he's his catchphrases. You know, what do you hear? What do you say? He's always hitching up his pants and shrugging his shoulders. And comedians and impersonators did that with Cagney for the rest of his life, you know. What do you hear? What do you say? What do you hear? What do you say? So anyway, so he's saying to the cops, I'm going to spit in your eye. I'm going to spit in your eye, cop. I'm going to spit in your eye. I'm not going to turn yellow. Pat O'Brien, his priest friend, comes to him and says, turn yellow, will you? He goes, I'm not going to turn yellow. I'm not going to scream and cry. I'm going to go out like a hero. And he says, please, please don't let these kids.
He doesn't say I'm going to sing like a canary or anything, does he?
No, he doesn't say that though. He probably should have. But he says, you know, I don't want these kids to look up to you. I don't want these kids to put you up there as a hero because they'll emulate you and they'll go into a life of crime. So please, please, for me, break. I can't do it, Father. I can't do it. I'm not going to break. And then the final scene in the movie, it's not giving it away because most people would have seen this by now.
Black and white. It's 100 years
old. It's 100 years old, yeah. Actually, it probably is nearly 100 years old. It's 1931, so it's 90 years old. Jesus, 90 years old, would you believe it? As he's dragged into the cell, into the electric chair, you see his shadow. Do you remember that final scene?
Yeah, he goes completely a bit wonk.
It's really powerful. So he just breaks down, he starts to cry. Yeah. And then Pat O'Brien meets the Dead End Kids, played the part of all the kids, and they're actually called the Dead End Kids. And they say, tell us it's not true, Father. Tell us that Rocky didn't turn yellow, Father. And he goes, he did, boys, he did. So you don't know at the end of it. It's kind of ambiguous.
If he meant it or he did.
Exactly.
If he was trying to be nice to the kids or if he really genuinely.
Exactly. Did he snap? Did he turn yellow at the end, or did he do it just for the kids?
Okay.
You're left confused, and that's a classic anti-hero ending. You don't know how to feel
about
it.
Let's get some more examples and go through them 10 times faster.
Okay, very quickly.
That was great, though.
But it's a good way. And those gangster movies, and we mentioned Michael Curtiz, right? And he directed that. And he also directed one of our favorite films.
I don't know where you're going with Casablanca here.
But that's
who's the anti-hero? Rick is an anti-hero.
Yeah, because look, Rick, I think, and this is interesting in Casablanca, Rick would be seen as the classic anti-hero because, and he's a guy who changes because on the face of it, Rick is only out for himself. Rick has no allegiances to anybody. Rick wants to make Rick's life easier, right? So, but we know that's not true. We know that he's heartbroken. We know that he's, you know, the only reason he's in Casablanca is because a love affair fell apart from him. And we know that his allegiances lie with the allies.
We know who he used to fight with years ago.
We know that, but we only know that in bits and pieces. We're not absolutely certain, but we know he did fight on the right, on the side of rights and just, you know. But it takes us a while to figure that out. So when we first meet him, he's cynical. He's got no ideals, you know, and he's basically out for himself and for looking out for himself. But bit by bit, you see where he refuses entry, for example, to the German officer into the VIP section. You know, kind of, Rick's not a bad guy. He's not an anti-hero. There's something going on in here. And then at the end, obviously, we find out that, in fact, he is a hero and he has done something quite heroic.
Yeah, but early on when he makes the two people win on the roulette table.
Yeah.
Like, you can see, like, that's a big sign that he's a
I'm not saying it's not. There is definitely signs there, but he's also, but he definitely has all the characteristics of an anti-hero starting off that film. Mm. And the writers, the brilliant Epstein twins who wrote it want you to believe that. And that's why Casablanca's lasted the test. That's why it's so great. It's because you at the start of it, you think this is not a nice guy. But slowly you figure out that no, he is. There's something definitely going on here. And I think that's kind of an really interesting character.
Yeah.
But you're right, he could easily equally be seen as a hero. But he definitely doesn't start off that way. He doesn't start off as your classic hero mode.
What about Tony Montana and Scarface?
Yeah, so I mean, talking about that, so you have those gangster movies bring it right up to the reasonably modern day, and you have Al Pacino as Tony Montana in Scarface. Again, now he would have no of the morals that Rick had in Casablanca. He would be, you know, completely amoral in many ways. So he would be a classic kind of anti-hero character because even though he's vicious and he's mean and he's cruel and he doesn't have any morals whatsoever, you do kind of like
it. That's funny. See, these are the three different examples. I like it the way you're going here. I don't agree with you on this one, frankly. I don't see anything to like about Tony Montana.
But he's a very attractive character to watch.
To a lot of people, he is. As you say yourself, there isn't a bedroom in the 1980s that didn't have a poster.
There was always
posters
up of him. Yeah, and he's a hugely popular character, largely because of the way Al Pacino plays him, and it's a brilliant script by Stone, and it's very well directed and all the rest of it. But he is a despicable character. Like he has no redeeming qualities whatsoever, and he goes out in the blaze of glory, and yet he is a charismatic character that you want to watch, you know, and you are glued to him on the screen. So for those reasons, I think he's an anti-hero. But he kind of breaks the mold in that I don't think you'd want to go for a drink with a guy.
Okay, what about Ethan in The Searchers, the great John Wayne character?
So funny enough, Ethan is always, and what's interesting is Ethan in The Searchers is always actually linked to another great anti-hero, would be Robert De Niro in Taxi Driver. And these two are kind of linked from decades apart, I know, but thematically they're very, very closely linked.
By the way, hold on, for those who don't know, I'm just going to give you a blast of Ethan as in John Wayne in The Searchers. Very different role than the one he usually plays.
Why don't you finish the job?
What good did that do you?
By what you preach, none. But what that Comanche believes, ain't got no eyes, he can't enter the spirit land. Has to wander forever between the winds. You get it, Reverend.
Actually, regardless of the fact that he's still acting the exact same.
He does, yeah. He still sounds exactly the same. Wayne always sounded the same and everything. Even when he played Genghis Khan, he sounded like John Wayne, you know? But so what's interesting about this is, as you say, this is a character that John Wayne didn't really play before, even though he sounds the same. He was a kind of a morally questionable character, Ethan Edwards. So the story of The Searchers is basically about this guy comes back from war and to his family, but there's a Comanche raid on the house when he's not there and they kill everybody, but they take two of the kids from there and the Comanches take them away, basically. And he is one of the searchers who goes in search of the young girl. But it's vicious, you know, it's really vicious. What they do to the Native Americans is you know, could not film that kind of stuff today. But I think John Ford, who directed it, was making a statement about what they called manifest destiny, the cowboys believed that they had the right to own this land and therefore the Indians were subhuman, so they didn't really care about them. So I think he's making a statement on that. But John Wayne's character is very kind of anti-Native American. At one point when they find the girl, played by Natalie Wood, and she has gone Native, as it were, she's kind of decided she's not going to come back to the settled community. He wants to kill her. You know, and this is his niece, so he threatens to shoot her. So he has, you know, very dubious morals, but he comes good in the end. So he is a classic anti-hero in that he has, you know, that you know underneath. First of all, it's played by John Wayne, so you feel he's got to be righteous in some way, you know. So, and it was interesting casting to put him in the role. And ultimately, he comes good. But all the way through the film, he's dark. He's a very, very dark
character.
And
he sure knows how to stand in the doorway.
Oh, that final moment where he walks out the doorway and he walks. I'll tell you a story about that if you have time. So he walks out this doorway, the door is open, and John Wayne walks out and he grabs his arm for some reason. He reaches over and very heroically squeezes his left arm. And people phrase think, why did he do that? Is that symbolic? Why did John Ford get him to do it? But Wayne said later on that Harry Carey was a guy he used to act with years ago as an actor. And Harry Carey had a weak left arm and he used to hold it like that all the time. And Harry Carey Jr. was in The Searchers and he was off set when Wayne was filming that scene. So when Wayne walked out, he saw him and as a tribute to his father, he just grabbed his arm like that.
Really?
As a tribute, and it ended up in the movie.
That's amazing. I didn't know that. Okay, how about this character? Because you've just mentioned him. He was really Taxi Driver.
Yeah.
You talking to me? You talking to me? You talking to me? Then who the hell else are you talking to? Talking to me? Well, I'm the only one here. Who the fuck do you think you're talking to? Oh, yeah? Huh? Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But now, you know, what's interesting is that that is completely linked to what we were talking about a second ago, to The Searchers, and I'll tell you how. The themes in it are very similar. So in The Searchers, John Wayne plays a war veteran who comes home to find, a girl is missing and he tries to save this girl. In here, we have, you know, Robert De Niro as Travis Bickle, who's a Vietnam War veteran, who's also trying to save a young girl and who has very dark motives. So they're very similar themes in both films. And Scorsese openly admits that this is like his homage to The Searchers. But I mean, he's a classic anti-hero because, he's very morally dubious.
Yeah, there's a difference in craziness, surely. I mean, like Travis Bickle is 10 times crazier than Ethan.
He's definitely 10 times crazier than Ethan, but you don't. But the thing about it is, you're not really sure about what level. He's obviously suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder because he's a Vietnam vet and that's what he's suffering from. So that's pretty clear, I think, in the film. But, and obviously he tries to assassinate someone and there's all that stuff going on there and there's a big shootout at the end. But I think the question of how kind of nuts he is very dubious at the end of the film, because at the end of the film, so at the end of the film, there's a big shootout in Taxi Driver, and then he survives it, and, but he's made a kind of a celebrity. He isn't tried because he kills a lot of pimps, basically, and bad guys, gangsters and, you know, thugs. So he's kind of celebrated for that, and it becomes a media sensation. He's on the papers, he's on chat shows, and he never gets charged. Now, the question is, and a lot of people have asked this, is that a dream? Did that actually happen? Or are they his...
That's up to you to decide.
Yeah, it's up to you to decide. Are they his dying moments? So is he really a horribly bad guy who dies in a blaze of gunfire? Or was he redeemed? You don't know. So they leave that very dubious at the end of the film. You've got to decide. Are they his dying moments?
Martin Scorsese leaves that very dubious.
That's what makes that really interesting.
So, Quentin Tarantino, he's at top of the list here in terms of his kind of...
And anti-heroines, though, for him, you know, he's very good at female leads. And, like, the two in particular that stand out, I think, are obviously Uma Thurman in the Kill Bill movies.
Now, Uma Thurman in the Kill Bill movies, unlike what I've just talked about there, that's somebody I would be backing all the way. You want her to win. If she's an anti-hero or not, I don't care.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she is. I mean, she is the classic anti-hero because, you know, she's so vicious, so violent and all that. And she has vengeance on her mind with very good reason. But you do love her. You know, you do love her and you do want her to win all the way. And it's a brilliant portrayal by her. So I think she's classic and she's really good.
Here, I'll give you a blast.
Wasn't. But it wasn't from lack of trying, I can tell you that. Actually, Bill's last bullet put me in a coma. A coma I was to lie in for 4 years. When I woke up, I went on what the movie advertisements refer to as a roaring rampage of revenge. I roared, and I rampaged, and I got bloody satisfaction. I've killed a hell of a lot of people to get to this point. I'm driving to right now. The only one left. And when I arrive at my destination, I am gonna kill Bill.
See, I'm going to kill Bill. See, the thing is, like, with the Searchers, I can take it seriously. With Travis Bickle and what do you call it, Taxi Driver, and take it seriously. Like, I'm not, that's cartoon, so it's fine by me.
Yeah, no, it is. It's very highly stylized, but it is very cartoony. And she plays, he doesn't even give her a name, he just calls her the Bride.
The Bride, you know?
So she's not even given a name in the film. Mm. But he's very good at that. And the other great one, I think, is Jackie Brown. And that's just fantastic. Yeah. And Pam Grier obviously plays that character. And it's an overlooked Tarantino film, I think. But Pam Grier, so she's an air hostess, but she's also smuggling drugs.
Yeah.
Robert De Niro's in it and Samuel L. Jackson's in it. And she's basically being pursued.
Robert De Niro is weird.
Very, very odd in the film. Very odd. They're all very odd in it.
The car park.
So yeah. That's weird. Very nuts. And Bridget Fonda, with the scene with Bridget Fonda.
Yeah, it's just like, sorry. Yeah, right. Quentin Tarantino. What were they thinking?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But so she's been chased by the feds to try and grass out these drug dealers, essentially, you know. So she is a kind of a character who works in the kind of, who exists in the moral grey area, you know. So I think she's really interesting and it's a great performance. And again, Tarantino, like he does with lots of actors, Pam Grier's career was in the toilet. It was over. I mean, she'd done all those great movies back in the 70s, Foxy Brown, all that kind of stuff. But I mean, she couldn't have got cast.
Yeah, he likes that kind of thing, though.
He loves
people
it,
back. Here, I'll give you a little quick blast.
Is that what I think it is?
What do you think it is?
I think it's a gun pressed up against my...
Well, you thought right. Now take your hands from around my throat.
Pam Grier. Okay, that's Jackie Brown.
Well, so, I don't find the clip that didn't have an F word or an N word or a C word.
It's very difficult.
Very hard to find
Tarantino,
that clip.
I can tell you. Okay, where do you want to go next? Bonnie and Clyde,
surely. Criminals, absolutely. Yeah. I think, like, you know, we talked about, you know, gangsters earlier on and Tony Montana, but criminals obviously are, just by the very nature of what they do.
This is my 50-50. I mean, like, obviously, like, they did a lot of bad things, these people, but, you know, you're rooting for them. And the ending is one of the most shocking endings in the history of Hollywood.
It absolutely is. But you couldn't call them heroes. You definitely couldn't call them heroes.
No.
You know, so like, I mean,
but they are the anti-heroes that I'm kind of going for as well.
Exactly. I mean, they are anti-heroes. I mean, they're very much so, but we're talking about Bonnie and Clyde, and Bonnie and Clyde would have the reputation of being kind of Robin Hood type characters, which they weren't.
No.
I mean, you know, they did not steal from the rich to give to the poor.
No.
They stole from the rich
and they
to
shot
give to
anybody
themselves.
From a bank who ran after them and didn't give a damn about anything.
And actually they didn't even steal from the rich to give themselves. They stole from anybody, including the poor, to give to themselves. But they did cultivate this image of being you know, kind of a Robin Hood-esque kind of thieves. So Bonnie and Clyde, real people, obviously, and they had a trail of bank robberies and murders through the Midwest, and again died in a blaze of gunfire after being hijacked on the street by the feds. So this film is made by Arthur Penn, and it stars obviously Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty in brilliant performances. The two of them had never been better.
Yeah, and what about Gene Hackman? Fantastic.
Gene Hackman is superb. And I think, isn't there a young Gene Wilder pops up in it as well? One of his very first screen roles.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So Gene Hackman's... Gene Hackman's, he was
the other guy was W.C. Moss.
W.C. Moss, fantastic, yeah. So basically, but what's interesting about that, as you say, is that... so they do horrible things. They kill people. They rob banks. I mean, but in the film... they're star-crossed lovers. It's like Romeo and Juliet. So they let them off the hook a lot. So by the time they end up riddled with bullets at the end of the film, as you say, in a really shocking scene, you really feel for them. Like, you don't want these guys to die.
Yeah.
You know, you want them to survive. So you do feel very conflicted about these characters. So in that way, they would be classic anti-heroes.
You know about the other two, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid?
Ended
the same way, but you didn't see any of that.
Well, so the thing,
maybe they got away with it.
Well, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid is exactly the same thing. So you have the two outlaws who are very attractive, and Butch and Sundance in real life robbed and murdered people. That's what they did. But in that film, because... we don't know. They possibly died in Bolivia and in a shootout. Yeah, yeah. Some people claim that Butch Cassidy ended up living in Utah. Yeah. In fact, I met a guy once who claimed to meet Butch Cassidy. He was 110 years of age. I did a documentary on Butch Cassidy. And I met this fellow. He was 110 years of age. Yeah. And he claimed he met Butch Cassidy in 1932 in Salt Lake City, Utah, which is 24 years after or something like that.
He was supposed to be dead in Bolivia. Really?
I remember meeting the guy and saying to him, so what made you think he was Butch Cassidy? The guy's 110. He goes to me, well, he said he was. Hang on. And did you have any other proof? Man said he was Butch Cassidy. That was as much as he gave me.
That's good enough for me.
But Bonnie at the end of that film, you're right, the end of that film. So what happens at the end of the film, they didn't want to see these two very attractive actors, you know, Paul Newman and Robert Redford, die in a hail of bullets. So really cleverly, they freeze frame the end of that movie. The two lads come out.
Hold on a second, now that I'm there, Thelma and Louise.
Thelma and Louise, exactly the same thing. So they freeze frame both those films in Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid. So what happens there is that these anti-heroes are frozen in time, alive for us, the viewer, forever. Yeah. We never have to see them die. Thelma and Louise, absolutely the same thing. They go off the side of that cliff, frozen in time forever. We don't have to see.
They did an evil Knievel. They got to the far side.
Oh, but then maybe they did. We don't have to see that car plunging to.
I'll give you a little bit of Bonnie and Clyde.
My name's Otis Harris. This is Davis. We work this place.
How you? This here's Miss Bonnie Parker.
Glad to meet
you. I'm Clyde Barron.
Clyde.
We rob banks.
They do. They rob banks indeed. Okay, so where do you want to... How about Cool Hand Luke?
Well, Cool Hand Luke, it's in the title. I mean, he's probably the coolest anti-hero of all time. And again, one of my favourite films. Paul Newman is just absolutely superb in this. And again, he matches all of those anti-hero criteria. This is Luke, who ends up in prison for ridiculous reasons. He's cutting the head off parking meters.
Exactly, like, you know, which is the very opening scene. Very is what the judge scene. Says.
Yeah, so he ends up in a chain gang. But famously, he has a failure to communicate
to communicate.
Exactly. So he kind of starts sticking it to the man. Now that whole thing is all tied up in all kind of Christ allegories and all this kind of stuff. And so it's a kind of a much deeper film than you'd imagine. But Paul Newman as Cool Hand Luke is the absolute classic anti-hero in there as well.
And if you like eggs, it's the movie for you.
It's the movie for you because he has a bet with George Kennedy.
Yeah.
Actually, George Kennedy had one of my a great line in that movie. Do you remember, there's a scene where this
I'm
woman...
I'm not crazy
is,
about that movie, but go on.
You're not?
No, sorry.
Do you know, remember the scene where the woman's cleaning the car?
Yeah, of course
so
I
this,
do.
This
yeah,
has been parodied.
Parodied?
For years
This is on proper ads for cleaning cars.
I know, yeah. So this well-endowed woman is cleaning the car with a big soapy sponge. Yeah. And she's doing it in front of the guys who are on the chain gang.
Yeah.
And the sun is belting down them. And George Kennedy, great actor, who won an Oscar for Cool Hand Luke, by the way, as Best Supporting Actor, he's in the chain gang and he's sweating down and he goes, Lord, whatever I've done, just please don't strike me blind.
Okay, that's Cool Hand Luke. Now listen, look, I mean, there's obviously a load more, so I'm going to throw a few at you and you can do them all together as far as I'm concerned. Tom Cruise as Jack Reacher, maybe Hannibal Lecter, maybe Liam Neeson in Taken. Are we looking at the same thing here?
Yeah, anti-heroes? No, I think so. Well, Liam Neeson in Taken, I think so. I mean, he's one.
You're not going to go Tom Cruise and Jack Reacher. No matter what he is, he might be outside the law, but he's Tom Cruise.
He is Tom Cruise, but he is still outside the law. Yeah, I mean, he still kills people. I mean, in all the both Jack Reacher movies, he kills people in the first 5 minutes, like, you know.
Yeah.
So he's
yeah.
not exactly doing it by the book.
Well, that's like, I mean, you know, he'd do the old, what was it, Southwest of Sonora, what was it, you know, he was saying, like, you know, like when he goes to a confession, I don't know why I started this.
Southwest of Sonora?
Yeah, no, not Tom Cruise.
Oh, what are you talking about?
What's his name? I can't, Lee Marvin. And he's at confession or something. He's a padre, it's been 100 years of my confession, and he's like, I'll kill some women. You
is
know
that in Point Blank?
No. Oh, that was a great movie.
That was a great
movie. Loved that movie. Yeah. No, he kind of says, you know, like killed, blah, 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 and they sinned and all the rest of the, you know. But the men needed killing and the women needed sinning. Three Our Fathers. Okay, go on. Sorry, where was I?
No, you're talking about Liam Neeson Taken. I mean, yeah. So Liam Neeson's classic speech on the phone would sets him up as the classic anti-hero. You know, I have a particular set of skills and make me a
yeah, but
a,
I mean, like, he's trying to save his daughter. He's
trying to save his daughter, but he's going to save his daughter by killing
guy.
Everybody.
He's killing
so that makes him not a good guy. You can save his daughter by going to the authorities, filling out the forms and starting the necessary missing piercing search.
All right, well, you know, then, hold on. I had a third one there. People. Hannibal Lecter.
Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah, at the very end, like, I'm having a friend for lunch. You say, oh, great, he's still alive. Seriously?
But you do like him, though, don't you? Because he's a very attractive character.
I don't know.
Yeah, you know, you're not going to go for dinner with the guy, clearly.
I did! This is great. I actually went for dinner with Anthony Hopkins once.
Did you?
People have often asked me, did he have a bottle of Chianti? I've no feckin' idea what he had in front of him. Yeah.
Where did you go for dinner with him?
In the hotel in London after an interview. Fancy. It was a movie he made called the one with the bear in it. The Edge. It was called.
Oh, The Edge with Baldwin.
Yeah. Fancy a bite? I said, yeah, sure. So he bought me dinner.
So Hannibal Lecter. Hannibal Lecter says you fancy a bite.
We talked about
Welsh
rugby for an hour and a half.
Really? Yeah. Well, there you go. But I think he is an anti-hero. I think because you do like him and you do like him, and you do. You're kind of chuffed at the end when he rings and you know he's still alive and you know he's out there and he's having a friend for dinner. And even though he's a despicable human being, but you're kind of given, I don't know, the drama and films particularly.
You're stretching me too much.
They
now
give you a little leeway to like these guys.
The most
well, you're the one who went for dinner with the guy.
One of the most horrific big screen people I've ever come across. Okay, look, very briefly. Yeah. I mean, do we say Robert Shaw might be one in Jaws?
Oh, Robert Shaw. Quentin Jaws is definitely not here. Definitely,
I know it's
definitely,
your favourite
movie.
So
it's my favourite movie of all time, and Robert Shaw is absolutely superb in that. Actually, do you know Steve McQueen was supposed to play that part originally?
No, yes. But I do know that you made a documentary on Robert Shaw.
I did, yeah, I did. It's one of my favourite movies. It's one of my favourite actors.
One of your favourite documentaries.
One of my favourite documentaries. It was nominated for an IFTA, actually. It didn't win. But he is an anti-hero. What else can I say about it? I mean, Quint is. I mean, he's a really gruff, mean, horrible man. But you know that he is looking out for these guys. He doesn't want these guys. He doesn't want to save the town, you know. And as he says, like, for $10,000, I gave you the head, the tail, the whole damn thing. So he's going to go out and get the shark, and he's going to come good in the end. And we know he doesn't, because he ends up being taken for a bite, as you were with Mr. Lecter, but in a much more gruesome way. But I think he is. Now, you other guy you mentioned, Aaron, this is the classic one, right?
All right.
And you'd have to talk about this guy if you're going for 20 years. We've talked about him before, Dirty Harry.
All right, yeah.
So Dirty Harry is that. And again, a very, very dubious, morally dubious character, who in today's cinema audience, he'd be cancelled. He's gone. There's no Dirty Harry. They can't exist now, right? A guy who goes out and just answers everybody with a smart mouth and a gun and doesn't care about your rights. You know, he's got some of the best lines in cinema history, I think, you know? And I think that character, Dirty Harry character, which, here's another bit of trivia for you, was originally going to be played by Frank Sinatra. But he broke his arm and he couldn't do it, so they gave it to Clint Eastwood instead. Would you believe that?
Is that why he didn't get it?
He broke his arm.
There's too many. We haven't even gone to Marvel comics and all
that. Well, Marvel comics, they're all anti-heroes. Yeah, so Wolverine, Iron Man, Deadpool, they're all.
All right, well, listen, you've made the point then. Some more so for me, definitely, but I still don't go back to Casablanca and say he's a total hero.
He's a hero to you. You probably have his poster on your wall, do you?
I did once, yeah.
Did you?
The three of them, yeah. Sam playing his piano. Okay, listen. Goodbye, Brian Redden, IFTA winner. Come on, Brian. Thanks very much indeed. My God Almighty.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.